Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. On this week's show, we have a jam-packed episode, so we hope you enjoy it. So sit back, relax, grab a cold beverage, and let's talk everything there is to know in Louisiana outdoors. Hey, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to a live episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Robery. And as always, guys, welcome to a new episode. And thank you so much for tuning in and joining us this week. So we're going to do something a little different this week, guys. We're going to do a live episode that we are streaming right here on our Facebook page and also on our YouTube page. So if you follow us on YouTube and you subscribe to Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors, you will see us right now if you're on scrolling on your phone on YouTube. Hopefully you got a notification letting you know that we're going live. And this is a live podcast that we are going to stream over both of those platforms, guys. So this is something that I've done in the past a couple of times, but we really haven't done a ton of episodes live to where we can interact with any kind of comments or anything like that from the audience. So I'm kind of looking forward to this. And I know it wasn't announced. It's kind of a spur of the moment type situation, but hopefully you guys don't mind joining me this afternoon on this episode. We have some absolute beautiful weather here in South Louisiana, guys. We had a cool front come through. Man, I'll tell you, it's been hot over the last couple of days. It has been extremely warm. Summertime pretty much looked like it has showed up early here in South Louisiana. And things got really warm this week, and it wasn't looking good. But then when you saw the extended forecast, it showed that we had a little cool front that could possibly hit with a little bit of rain, which was supposed to be today on Sunday with a little bit of rain. But as you guys can see behind me, we are sunshine today. We have not received any rain whatsoever. And really, it's been beautiful all day. We have our temperatures that have now dropped down into the lower 50s this morning. You know, right early on this morning, it was in the lower 50s. And then now we're up into the upper 60s for, as we sit here, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So what a beautiful day. Glad to be here with you on my back porch this afternoon, just chatting with all of you and talking a little bit of outdoors. So it's been a couple of weeks, guys, since we got together, since we had an episode, a podcast episode, and really just a lot of things have been going on. And honestly, to be upfront with everybody, I wanted to step away for a couple of weeks just to kind of rejuvenate myself as far as coming out of hunting season. We had been consistent with delivering podcasts all hunting season long, and that takes a grind on you. It really does. It takes a toll on you. It takes a grind, and that's something that I think sometimes you just have to do as a creator. You need to sometimes step back for a week or 2 weeks, and you know, not being a huge podcast, we have the luxury of being able to do that at our convenience. So that's really what we did, guys. We wanted to get outside, take a couple of fishing trips over the last couple of weeks, so that we could share some information with you and kind of recap what we did and kind of what we've been up to, guys. So hopefully you guys have been also in the outdoors. I hope everybody, with springtime around, you know, in full swing right now, a lot is going on. You know, you think coming out of deer season, coming out of waterfowl season, that there's not going to be a whole lot to do other than fishing. But if you look at it, guys, springtime, it offers a lot of great hunting opportunities. So a lot of you boys that are chasing turkeys right now, you're probably out there turkey hunting. I know I have a couple of buddies of mine that are out there doing some turkey hunting right now, and they've been having some success with turkeys this year down in South Louisiana. So that's always a good thing. I know, guys, that turkey hunt, it is in your blood, guys. I've never turkey hunted in my life. I've always said I'd be interested in doing it, but I've never honestly been on a hunt to hunt turkey specifically. And I can see why guys would get hung up on it, man. They say it's something that gets in your blood, and it's very fun to do. So maybe one day that's something that I'll take a trip. I'll do a little bit of turkey hunting and make a couple of trips and hopefully see what it's all about. But yeah, turkey hunting's in full swing right now. Season is in full swing, and that's going on. But also fishing season, guys. But we talked about it a while back, a couple of weeks back. We talked about how boating season is kicking up right now. And when boating season kicks up, that means typically that the fishing is hot in the springtime. And that's what we've been up to over the last couple of weeks. So having a lot of fun. We've been making several trips, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit in this episode today, guys, is kind of what we did, what we've been focusing on as far as the fishing goes, and kind of what our success rates have been and what's been working for us. We'll share all that information with you on this episode, guys. So we're looking forward to discussing, you know, a little bit of fishing. So, you know, as we get into it, fishing season, guys, when we kick up fishing season here in Louisiana or down south specifically, our spawns typically occur a little bit earlier than most of you guys in the upper portions of the United States. Obviously, because we have warmer temperatures that hit down here, the moon changes, the time of day changes. The phase, the cellular tables change as far as what the moon phases and everything going on with all of that. And that really kickstarts our spawning season down south pretty early. Typically, you're going to be starting to see a lot of your freshwater fish starting to spawn in February, late February, March, April, and then your shad spawn typically sometime around late April into May. So there's a lot that's going on, you know, at this time of year with the fishing. And for us, if you had been following us on the channel, on our YouTube and Facebook channel, you've been seeing that we've been putting out some videos. So we've been making about one video per weekend over the last month or so. And really, that's because we can only make one trip per weekend with my work schedule right now. So we've been going on one trip per weekend, but we've been making those trips count for the most part. So we've been having some success. We've been having some fun with it. And what we've been targeting, guys, is panfish. So springtime panfish offer some of the most fabulous fishing that you could have. And it's not only fun for us as adults, but it's also a great time to get the kids out there with you and get some action for them on the water. So I've been taking, you know, Jackson made a couple of trips with me, my oldest son. But I've also been getting my youngest son, Hudson. He's been coming with me quite a bit. And he hasn't been in as many of our hunting videos, but he loves to fish, and he's been coming with me on some of the fishing trips that we've been taking over the last month or so, and he's been having a blast, guys. So you've probably been seeing him. You've been seeing the fun that he's having on these trips that we're going on, and it's just a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun. But, you know, my background, I used to bass fish quite a bit, like many of you probably, and I still enjoy bass fishing, but before my kids came along, I was really heavily into tournament bass fishing. I fish a lot of local bass tournaments, and I really enjoyed bass fishing a lot. You know, that was something that I did before my kids. But previous to that, you know, my upbringing as far as coming up through the years, we kind of all start out learning with panfish, small fish, brim, you know, what we call socale here in Louisiana, which is white perch, or, you know, crappie for some of you may call it. And that's stuff that we typically all kind of grow up learning how to fish, you know, or kind of honing in our skills, our fishing skills, I guess you could say, on panfish. And, you know, my grandfather, when he was still alive, my dad's dad, his nickname was actually called Fishing Daddy. All his friends called him Fishing Daddy. He was a big socale fisherman. He loved to go after socale. He loved to catfish. He loved to brim fish. And for years, we had a camp up at Saline Larto. So those of you who are in the central part of Louisiana, you know exactly where I'm talking about. We had a camp for almost 20 years up there at Woodson's Landing. And Mr. Leon Woodson, that runs that landing to this day, we had a camp up there. And the way we ended up buying a camp up there at the time is that my grandfather, we grew up about an hour away from that area. And my grandfather and I would take a bunch of fishing trips up to Saline Larto. We'd go out there and we'd do some socale fishing. And we started going so much that at one point he turned to me one day in the boat and he said, "You know what, grandson?" He said, I'm gonna buy me a place up here and I'm gonna move up here. He said, I'm gonna fish as much as I can." And you know, he was probably in his 70s at that point. He was getting a little older, you know. But that's, my grandmother had passed. You know, he didn't have a whole lot holding him to the town that we grew up in. I was in college at the time. I had just got into college. So I was going, you know, to meet him to go on fishing trips specifically. And then I'd head back to Baton Rouge to go back to college during the week. So lo and behold, that's exactly what he ended up doing. He ended up purchasing a camp up there, or a home to him at the time. And we would go out there and we would go fishing all the time, guys. And really, that's what my passion and my love for the fishing side of things came from was those Sockeye trips. We would go up there. We'd do some deep water Sockeye fishing. We'd also do some shallow water in the spawning time at this time of year. We'd go up in the Budden Woods and we'd fish those fish shallow and just really had a good time and made a lot of good memories before he ultimately passed away from cancer. But to the day he died or the week he died, he passed away. He was out there. He had a little 14-foot, 36-inch bottom aluminum boat with a 9.9 Sahatsu four-stroke engine. And him and I would take that boat out there, or if I wasn't around, if I was at school during the week, he would go out there and he would he'd fish by himself, man. He'd go after those sockeye and just fish till the time he passed, pretty much, man. So all of his friends that knew him, like I said, they called him Fishing Daddy, and I learned a lot of pan fishing techniques and tactics and stuff that was successful from him, my grandfather, so before he passed along, because I was very blessed. When I look back at it now, guys, I was very blessed to be able to spend some time with my grandfather back then. And I really, you know, now since he's passed, I really cherish that time that I had with him and the stuff that he taught me. It made me a better fisherman and made me a better person, to be honest with you, you know, or at least that's the way I feel about it. So, but pretty much a lot of what I've learned pan fishing through the years was from him. Now, my dad, he also was a big fisherman at one time when I was real young. He took me as a kid. And he was big into fly fishing for brim. So I don't know if any of you guys have ever done that before, but fly fishing for brim is something that a lot of guys, they get very into, man. If they're into pan fishing, they like it, especially nowadays with a lot of guys that are kayak fishing and small vessel fishing. You know, it can be done out of a small John boat. It can be done out of a kayak or, you know, just a full-size boat that it can be done out of. But he used to love to target those brim, especially at this time of year. Whenever we would get into the spawning time, he would love to go after those brim around tupelo gum trees and around cypress trees with a fly rod. And I remember as a kid, man, I tried it a couple of times and I just couldn't get a hang of it because I was getting hung up in the trees and everything else. And it was something he told me. He said, you gotta develop a patience for it. You gotta be able to spend a little time practicing it in order to get good. But boy, I tell you what, that was something that was really cool. Once I got the hang of that, I used to like to take a fly rod with some floating line and I would go around those trees with my dad and we would catch a lot of those big black bull brim and a lot of those fish, man, those panfish. So that was a good time as well. So yeah, I grew up doing that type of stuff and I always had a passion for pan fishing before I really got into the whole bass fishing thing and into tournament bass fishing. But what I'm noticing now, guys, is that with my kids coming up, do I still like to bass fish? Yes, I still like to bass fish, but I find myself enjoying pan fishing a little bit more these days. So when I'm coming out of duck season and, you know, you have that stress of on the go constantly, being a public land duck hunter, you know, you guys know how it is. We always on the go. When you come out of hunting season, you're kind of looking for something to just kind of unwind and kind of wind down a little bit, you know. And pan fishing has done that for me. It's something that I could sit back, I could chill, I could relax, and I could enjoy. Just go out there, no stress. Don't have to be there at a certain time. I could take an afternoon trip if I want to take an afternoon trip. And you know, don't have to worry about getting up at 2 a.m, you know, like we do during hunt season. None of that type of stuff. So it's a lot of fun. It really is. And it's something that's relaxing and therapeutic. And it's something that I really like. So, you know, and like I mentioned, with my kids coming with me right now, it's something that they could do with me that they could enjoy and they get a lot of action. If you're looking to get a kid involved in the outdoors, guys, and you tried the hunting thing and that's not necessarily something that they've enjoyed because of the action might be slow or whatever the case may be. Maybe they just don't like going out in the cold weather. They don't like doing that. We always talk about how important it is to get kids nowadays in the outdoors. And I really, really, truly believe that. I think it is vitally important that we get kids in the outdoors nowadays. And, you know, maybe hunting might not be something that they're into, but I promise you that if you pick up a fishing rod and you put a fishing rod in a kid's hands, that more than likely, guys, they are going to not want to put those fishing rods down, especially if you get them a little bit of crickets or a box of worms. and you let them go after some panfish like we're talking about in this episode. It is very seldom that you're going to buy a box of worms for a kid and take them out to a pond or a lake or wherever it is that you want to take them and them not catch something and have a little bit of action that's going to ultimately get them hooked on fishing, guys. So I know with my kids, it's something that I'm really enjoying with them because they're getting a little bit older now. Jackson's now a freshman. He's going to be a sophomore here pretty quickly because they're almost done with his first year of high school. And then I got Hudson coming up right behind him. And like I said, it's going to be over before I know it because it flies by and it's done. And, you know, I don't have any more little ones behind them. So I'm trying to take every advantage I can, every moment I can right now, whether it's you see us in a duck blind, whether you see us out on the lake crabbing, you see us fishing, whatever it may be. You guys know that my kids have been involved in outdoors since we started this channel and even before. And it's just something that I think is very, very important for, you know, parents to get the kids out there and get them involved in the outdoors. So, but yeah, that's what we've been up to, guys. We have been doing a lot of pan fishing. So to kind of fill you guys in that are looking to take some trips and kind of let you know what we've seen out there in the field, just like we do during duck season, we try to give you some reports on what we see out there and what we can relate back to you to help you have more success. Pretty much we started pan fishing, I guess, about the end of February. We're going to start targeting sockeye or crappie, white perch, whatever you call them. And then that's really when we want to try to start getting on those. In my opinion, and this is my opinion only, some of you are probably going to agree with me on this. And I don't know many people that would disagree, but I think personally that the sockeye, crappie, white perch, whatever you want to call it, is probably the best eating fish in the water, specifically for freshwater, no doubt, for sure. But I think, you know, I've saltwater fished down here in Louisiana, I've freshwater fished. I think that crappie and sockeye are the finest eating fish that you could put on the table, in my personal opinion. So that's really something that we try to target when we're coming out of hunting season. We get everything cleaned up and put away for the year. We want to start targeting those. And that's really what we did, guys. We started back in February. We took a couple of trips locally. The good thing, I can say this, the good thing for us this season is that we have not had to travel very far to catch fish so far this spring. And that's a good thing because the reason I'm going to say that's a good thing is because a couple of years ago, this area where we live in Ascension Parish, down here in South Louisiana, it was devastated, guys, by Hurricane Ida. And all of our fisheries took a major hit whenever Hurricane Ida came through. And it really ruined the fishing. It ruined everything, you know, as far as the bodies of water in this area. We had massive fish kills. And that was something that you couldn't really take a local trip or a close fishing trip next to the house and go out and catch a mess of fish. We had to start traveling a little bit further away to areas that weren't affected by the storm as much as we were. So the good news is now we fast forward a couple of years. Here we are 3 or 4 years later, and we're able to not have to take those long trips anymore this spring to be able to go out and go fishing because we're catching fish not too far from home here. So I'm really excited to see that happen. Hopefully, you know, we're heading into summertime. Hopefully, you know, when summertime comes around, of course, hurricane season comes around. And I'm really hoping that we can have a couple of more years where we dodge, you know, a couple of major hurricanes or direct hits to this specific area. Because, you know, when you live down in the Gulf Coast, guys, it's a matter of time. You know, we deal with natural disasters just like everybody else does, no matter where they live at. And for us, it's hurricanes down here in the Gulf Coast region. So it's only a matter of time that it's going to happen. It's going to hit again. But if we could get a little span, a little break from where we were a couple of years ago and get some of those fisheries bouncing back like they are and like we've seen so far this spring, then that's a good thing. And that's really the best that we could ask for, you know. So like I mentioned, we've been staying close to home. We haven't had to travel real far, you know, and we started out late February looking for sockeye. And typically what we're targeting whenever that spawn time comes around, guys, is, you know, shallow water laydowns, you know, maybe trees that are, you know, falling off of the bank, maybe collapsed down into the water. We focus in and keying in on fallen trees, you know, underwater stumps sticking out of the water, any kind of structure, any kind of hard structure that we could locate and we could fish that's typically where we're going to find a lot of those Socolate making their ways to the banks. Now, what I can tell you is that in February, you know, they weren't in full swing spawn mode yet, which means they weren't on the banks. They weren't real tight to the banks on the trips that we took. So what I typically find a lot of people do, especially down in South Louisiana, since we are accustomed to fishing shallow water, is that a lot of people, they get right up on the bank and you want to get close to the bank and you want to try to fish the bank. But I'm going to be honest with you. With Socolate guys, my grandfather and also my father-in-law, who's a very well-known Socolate fisherman in this area and in his area where he lives, he taught me this. He said, you know what? He said, a lot of times you got to back off of that bank. Don't get tight to that bank, because a lot of times what those Socolate will do is they'll stage on those drop-offs. You know, a lot of times what we're fishing here in South Louisiana is these canal systems, these oil field canal systems. So, you know, everybody, like I said, wants to fish the bank where all the structure's at. But specifically in late February, before those fish are pulling up tight to the bank, what they're doing is they're pulling up from the deeper water to the shallow water, and they are staging up on those drop-offs before they move up closer to the bank to start doing their thing and start spawning. And a lot of times, if you're too tight to the bank and you are fishing and pounding that bank and that structure, and you're not getting those bites, it's probably because your boat's situated right over where those fish are staging up at and where they're holding at. So what I've been taught by him and my grandfather when we used to fish, like I mentioned, is almost, if you're in these canal systems, position your boat in the middle of those canals, cast towards the bank, and then bring it out to the drop-offs, and then locate those fish that way. Now, you know, that's the old school way, I guess you could say, of locating those fish, because nowadays with, you know, live scope and all that type of stuff with the technology we got, you guys that have live scope on your boats, man, you could probably locate them very, very quickly by just looking at live scope and locating those fish, the concentration of fish and where they're at. So what I'm explaining is on my boat, I don't have live scope. I'm doing it old school. But what I do is I get out in the middle of a canal system and I cast towards the bank and I kind of fish my way out back to the bank, and I locate those fish on where those Socolate are staging up at when they're, you know, in pre-spawn time. So another thing is not only locating where they are, but also how deep they are. So I typically start out shallow, you know, maybe about 1.5 to 2 foot deep. And I throw shallow and I bring it out and I keep it consistent on a cork. We're fishing a cork in that situation a lot of times. So what we'll do is I'll keep it about 1.5 to 2 foot deep on my cork, position my boat out in the middle of the canal system, bring it out shallow, and then bring it back to the boat, to the deeper water, and try to locate those Socolate in pre-spawn mode and see where they're fishing at. So that kind of is what I tend to do and what I focus on. So, Blake, what's going on, man? I see you comment, no fishing today, buddy. We had some stuff going on. Didn't get to make a trip today, so we had some stuff to do this morning. And didn't get to make a trip this weekend, which, honestly, I thought it was going to rain. I thought that when I looked at the weather, man, they had told us 70% chance of rain on Sunday. So I thought it was going to rain, and I had some stuff going on anyway, Blake, so I wasn't too worried about making a trip today. But now looking at it, man, you can see it's sunshining over here in Gonzales. I wish I would have went. So hope you're doing all right, man. But anyway, getting back to that, guys, I was telling y'all kind of what I do to locate those fish in pre-spawn, like in February. That's what we were doing. And those fish are typically going to be on those drop-offs from that shallow water to that deeper water. And that's where we were catching fish at. Now, we didn't have to go very deep with the corks. We were able to catch them at about 2 to 2.5 foot deep is where we found them in February. And we had some pretty good trips. You guys, if you follow us on our YouTube channel, you saw that we were having some successful trips, catching some pretty good Socolate, not massive Socolate, but we were catching good size for this area that was hit by Hurricane Ida a couple of years ago. Plenty enough to keep and make a fish fry with. So, you know, my family, we eat a lot of Socolate in our household, guys. I got two boys that are growing, and them boys absolutely love fried fish when it comes to Socolate. And they can put some groceries down, if you know what I mean. So we have to keep it stocked up pretty good, man, whenever it comes around, and we could get on them pretty heavy. So February, we were catching them pretty good. We went back about a week or two later and we started fishing, you know, trying the same pattern. And we noticed that we weren't getting as many bites at that point. So we started kind of keying in more towards the bank and that stretch between the boat and the bank, a little bit closer to the bank. And we were fishing them with corks once again. And we started catching fish a little bit tighter in, which made it more sense because the temperatures were warming up and those fish were moving up closer to the bank, closer to that structure that we talked about, such as those stumps, you know, all those underwater structure, those trees, all that type of stuff. And when we're casting, you know, that tube jig that we're using, we are casting it around that cover and we're popping a cork around that cover and we're looking to get that reaction strike with those sockeye. So that's typically what we're going to do during the spawn time and what we were doing to have some success this year. And for about a 2 to 3 week span, we were able to catch those fish tight to the cover, tight to the bank. And it was pretty consistent, guys. We could go just about every week. I couldn't fish during the week because of work, but I knew, you know, the good thing about going every weekend is you kind of stay on that pattern while they're on that pattern. And so you don't have to spend a lot of time when you go back trying to relocate fish and do all that type of stuff. So we were going back to the areas, whether it was in the same canal systems that we were fishing the week before, or, you know, the canal systems that were maybe similar, had some similarities to what we had some success on. We were fishing those same looking, same style canal systems, same structure, and we could go directly to that type of structure that we knew those fish should be holding onto and immediately start catching fish. So that's always a plus when you don't have to kill a lot of time and a lot of water just to locate those fish, if you know what I mean. Sorry, I had to get a taste of water, guys. So, like I said, during spawn, I typically like to target them under a cork. I like to go, you know, where that bait's suspended. Now, you know, I had a couple of people on the YouTube channel and on social media. They commented and they said, okay, what are you guys using? Like they saw how we were fishing them with a cork for the, you know, a couple of weeks or about a month it was where we were fishing them under a cork. And they said, what are you guys using? Well, we use a bunch of different stuff for sockeye. And I'll be honest with you, you know, we really do. My buddy Blake Benoit, who Blake commented a second ago, I was talking to him on this live. He owns a company called Benoit's Performance Baits, guys. And I'm not just saying this to plug Blake's company because he's a friend of mine. But we really do use his plastics. He does hand-poured plastics. But is that the only plastics we use? No, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you that's the only plastics we use. But he does have some plastics and some colors that he hand-pours that we do have a lot of success on and we like a lot. So we continue to use those. You know, we had placed a big order with Blake about 2 years ago. And honestly, we still got quite a bit of plastics, but there's a couple of different styles that we go with when we're looking at plastics. During that pre-spawn stage, we typically going to use a straight tail, something like a minnow style, because I find that they're gorging up during that pre-spawn time, and they're really keying in on those little minnows, those little shiners, that type of stuff, and that's what they're going after. And that's what we like to focus on whenever they're in that pre-spawn mode, like late February, early March. And then as they move tighter to the structure and to the cover, for some reason, and I'm not exactly sure why that is, I find that we don't catch as many on the straight-tailed minnow style. So what I typically have done over the years is I go to a curl-tail grub in that situation. And I start fishing under that cork. I start fishing that grub-tail worm. And I don't know if it's the action of that grub-tail where when it falls, you jerk, you pop that cork, and that bait falls, that it spins that tail, and it gives it some action. And maybe they bind it out of an aggressive type attitude. I don't know exactly if that's what it is, but in my head, that's kind of what I'm thinking whenever I notice that we stop catching or stop getting as many bites on the minnow style and then go to that curl tail. So typically as they get more into full spawn mode, you know, into, you know, mid-March, late March, early April, then we switch a lot of times to a grub tail worm for the most part. Don't ask me exactly why, but I kind of just explained it to you guys. That's what my thoughts are on it. But that we've always done that, and I find that every year, consistently, I have success with that straight tail minnow style early on, and then I switch to that grub tail, and it tends to be better for me in that situation. So That's what we use. Now, color-wise, guys, it just depends. Weather conditions play a big part with crappie, with sockeye. You're going to know real quick with sockeye if they want a certain color that you're throwing. Now, you know, the old tried and true colors, your black and chartreuse, you know, your blue and whites. Depending on the water clarity of where you at, I have found that, you know, those colors will typically work pretty good in all water clarities. But we also use a lot of bright colors, you know, for sockeye when we're talking about sockeye specifically. So I like what's the color that I use all the time? I'm going blank on it right now, but not electric chicken. Popsicle. I can't believe I forgot that name. But popsicle is a color that we like to use, especially when in that spawn mode. And honestly, popsicle is really good for us year round. Even in the hot months, summer months, popsicle tends to work really good for our water type that we have down here in Louisiana. We have a lot of dingy water. We have a lot of, you know, it's not, you know, like big oxbow lakes, clear water. It's not water like in Toledo Bend in the northern part of Louisiana. It's a lot of river system water, so you get rains and it mixes and dirties up the water. But I find that popsicle is a good color that we have success on, whether it's the Chaffalaya Basin spillway, whether it's Lake Verret, whether it's, you know, Blind River area. Pretty much any of the places I've been to in Louisiana, I've always had pretty good luck on you know, that color popsicle. So I really like that color. That's something that we use and have a lot of success on that we did this year. And that's pretty much one of my go-to colors that I keep tied on my rod at all times of the year. And I'll pick it up first and throw it out just to test, see if I can get a couple of bites. And if I get a couple of bites on it, sometimes I don't even put it down with that color, guys. I really like that color a lot. So that's something that we've had a lot of success on, is that popsicle color. And like I said, just remember this, guys. This is just what I've seen over the years. And I've caught a lot of sockeye through the years with my, starting out with my dad, my grandfather, and up into my adulthood. Early on, for some reason, straight tail minnows are very good, I find. And then as they get more into that spawn mode, once again, I'll repeat this, I tend to switch to that curl tail grub, and that's where I get more bites than I do on the straight tail minnow when they're in that full spawn mode. So keep that in mind, guys. Maybe try that, see if that helps you guys out. But now, as we sit, you know, we are what, mid-April right now. Today we're mid-April here. We're out pretty much here in South Louisiana. We're for the most part, the sockeye spawn is done. They may still be some out there that are spawning, and we do have some eggs. I know last weekend we caught a couple that still had eggs on them. I can tell you this, it's not uncommon, and some people don't know this. So if you're new to fishing, you may not realize this, but some of these fish spawn multiple times, guys. They will spawn multiple times, or you'll have waves of fish coming through that'll spawn maybe more than one time. So I learned that years ago, that these fish don't only spawn once necessarily and then move back out to the deep water. They'll actually spawn, move out for a little bit, then they might go back and spawn again. That's not uncommon to see. So you probably still have a few sockeye right now if you fish this weekend, guys, and you at home cleaning a mess of fish tonight. Or yesterday, you probably noticed that a couple of them still had eggs in them, and I would not be surprised to see that. That's not uncommon. I'm not surprised by it. But for the most part, the spawn is just about near the end here in Louisiana, specifically South Louisiana. I can't say up north. I haven't made any trips up north to North Louisiana or Mississippi, any of the surrounding areas. But for the most part, South Louisiana, we're just about done on the end. So What we'll see as far as the spawn waves, another thing to mention, and what I've always experienced, is that you don't see none of the species kind of mix a lot of times as far as when they're spawning. And what I mean by that is sharing the bank. That stretch of bank where those fish pull up tight on that cover, it comes in waves. You'll have sockeye pull up at a certain time, do their thing for a couple of weeks, you know, maybe a month, month and a half, and then they kind of back off, and then you'll see maybe bass move in, and the bass will do their things. They'll do their spawning up tight on the banks, and then you'll see the perch, the brim, all your panfish, your little small fish, sun perch, you know, your goggle eyes, your red ears, all those type of fish. They'll move up on the bank and they'll do their thing, which is what is going on right now. So if you watched our video last week over the last two trips that we took, guys, we have been catching more brim. So a lot of those sockeye, like I said, they're kind of done. They're pulling back out to a little bit deeper water, or at least on those drop-offs right now. And they made way now for the brim to move up and come in and do their spawning. So you're starting to see the brim making beds as of the last couple of weekends. That's what we were seeing. We would hit a stretch. Like I said, our water wasn't real clean to where you could just see them under the water, like in maybe a clear water lake or something like that. But you could definitely know when you were starting to hit those areas where those brim were starting to make those beds, because you wouldn't have a bite, you know, you wouldn't have a bite. And then all of a sudden you'd hit a stretch, a bank where I'd cast in, and bam, 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 you catch two, three, four of them back to back. Well, that in that same area, well, that's telling you right there that those brim are starting to bed up. So that's something that you definitely want to key in on. You don't want to go down those banks so fast right now if you're pan fishing to where you catch a bite, you know, you catch a fish, and you keep moving. If you catch a fish, stop for a second, cast, make a repeat cast, and see if you can get another bite. And that's how you're going to locate those beds. Oftentimes, another tactic to locate those brim beds right now, guys, is how fast you get that bite. If you flip that cricket in there, or you know, that beetle spin or whatever you fishing, and that fish immediately hits it, and then chances are there's going to be another one right behind it that's sitting there, or maybe multiple fish on those brim beds. So I've noticed that over the last couple of weekends, man. If we were cork fishing, like Hudson was cork fishing with crickets, or, you know, even a tube jig or something like that, he'd cast in there, and bam, that cork would get sunk immediately. Well, I'd cast right behind him, and bam, I'd get a bite right immediately in the same spot. So that's how we were locating some of those beds for those brim. Also, another thing, guys, and those of you who panfish and you do this for all the time, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. But this is another tactic, guys. If you are looking to get into panfishing and you learn it, you're trying to find out how to locate them right now, also listen to your surroundings around you. What those brim do, and all the different species of brim, they'll make a sucking sound on the water. It's like a pop sound. You'll hear them tack, tack, tack. You'll hear a popping sound. And you may think I'm crazy if you've never heard it, but trust me, that is legit, guys. You can locate them like that as well. They'll come up and they're feeding, and they'll pop. They'll hit something on that water, and they'll make a popping sound. Especially when they're starting to congregate and bed up right now, like they are during the springtime. When they're looking to congregate, they're feeding, making beds. They're doing all their stuff to do their spawn. And they make a lot of noise, guys. They start to get where they make that popping sound, and you can locate them a lot of times by just listening to where those pops are coming from. Another thing about that popping sound is a lot of times whenever you're going to hear that, it's going to be certain types of structure that you're going to hear that popping or that sucking sound that I'm talking about those brim making. So, for instance, lily pads, if you're in shallow water, which is where these fish are moving up to spawn, I noticed that those pops a lot of times come around structure like lily pads, where they're up underneath those lily pads. They may get some kind of little bait fish or something trapped up under there, under those lily pads when it comes through the current. And it's easy prey. They can go out and they can get it and eat it real quick, and they make those popping sounds. So be alert. Listen to your surroundings, guys, for stuff like that. That's just a little tactic, a little tip for you guys, that if you're looking to locate some brim right now, and you're close to the banks, you're pounding up on those banks right now for brim, listen for that sucking or that little popping sound that I'm talking about, because that's going to also help you locate some of those brim right now. Like last week, there was an instance wherever we had went down this stretch of bank, and I heard it. And I told Hudson, I said, hey, I said, I'm looking at my lab, guys. I'm sorry. I got something. Oh, he got his toy in his mouth. But anyway, I told Hudson, I said, hey, you hear that popping sound? And he kind of looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, what? And I was like, a popping sound. I was like, watch, listen. And we got quiet. And we were in this cut by ourselves. It was quiet, just not a lot of wind. And boy, you could hear him tack, 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 tack. They'd pop. And he would look at me and he's like, yeah, I do hear it. And I said, that's brim. I said, that's either, you know, I don't know what type of brim it is. It could be sun perch, it could be red ear, it could be goggle eye. I said, but that's brim. I said, they're located right here. They're probably trying to bed up. And sure enough, we scooted up to it closer and we started casting. boom, boom, boom. We were getting those bites, getting those hits, and we were putting some of those bigger brim that are looking to spawn into the boat, guys. So yeah, definitely pay attention to your surroundings as far as sounds go, because they will tip themselves off those brim right now as they're doing their thing, starting to spawn as well. So last weekend, what was funny is, we talked about how the different species will move up at certain times. They don't kind of mix too much. You won't typically see the bass spawning with the stockolates, spawning with the brim, all in the same stretch of banks, you know. They kind of move up in waves. But what's funny is, like, the brim species, they'll also do the same thing. You don't you will catch them more mixed than you do with some of the other stuff I talked about. But what's funny is if you get on a brim bed and you're catching sun perch, a lot of times it's going to be mainly sun perch that you're going to catch. Then the next time you go, you might go a week later, and it may be all goggle eye you're catching. They've moved up. And goggle eye are some of the most aggressive fish out there, man. I tell you, those goggle eye, they are so damn mean. And it's crazy. They have the mouth like a bass, but then they got the body of a brim. But they are some of the meanest little fish that you can catch out there. And they are fun as hell to catch and aggressive. I've actually had some people say, man, I throw away the goggle eye. I don't like them because they don't taste as good as some of the other brim. I can tell you that I don't notice a difference, and I've eaten a lot of fish. I've eaten goggle eye. In the Chaffalaya Basin spillway here in Louisiana, guys, they have some of the biggest goggle eye that I have ever seen in my life. And through the years, if you go, if the water's right and the water levels are right, you can catch them in the spawn. It is absolutely stupid, the goggle eye that you can catch. I had a friend of mine, Jacob Mayer, from right here in Gonzales. He and I took a trip. This was probably, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, guys. We had went down to the Chaffalaya Basin spillway over there out of Bell River, Louisiana. And, man, we went and we were paying. We were stockolate fishing is what we had went for, actually. But it ended up being where we weren't catching the stockolate anymore. They kind of moved out. And we went to this area where we had caught some stockolate previous weeks. And those goggle eye had moved up instead. And it was an area, it was a stretch, it was a canal system where they had a bunch of sunken, you know, logs, stumps that were sticking out of the water. And boy, you would cast a tube jig. We didn't even have crickets or worms, nothing like that. But you would cast a tube jig, and they would sink it the minute it hit the water pretty much. And when I'm telling you, some hammer goggle eye guys, they were the size of what we catch chocolate down here. They were massive. I mean, they would literally pull drag on those little spin casts we were using. And we caught, I don't know how many we caught, but I can tell you this much. We caught so many that we had put in the live well. We were having a blast and just got carried away, and we went after them. And there was no limit on them at that time as far as what you could keep. So we were just catching them. We'd keep the big ones, but they were all big. They were just all big ones. And I started noticing that in my bass boat, the water in the live well, we were throwing them in the live well, we had the live well running, and I started noticing that the water was starting to bubble out of the live well, out of the lids of the live well. And it was starting to come out onto the deck, and I stopped for a second, and I told Jacob, I said, man, what's going on? So I ran to the back, I opened up the live wells, and there were so many goggle eye in the live well that I guess it was clogging up the overflow in the live well because there were so many in there, and the water couldn't escape, so it was coming out through the lid of the live well. So it was insane. You guys probably see Lucy and Rue behind me if you're watching this, guys. They in the backyard, they wrestling with each other. Look at them jumping. Lucy's growing, man. Those of you who follow us on social media, guys, we did a couple of videos on Lucy. That's Jackson's new lab that he got in December. And, boy, she is growing like a weed right now. So she's getting big. Hopefully we'll be able to take her on maybe a duck trip this year. I know he's worked with her for quite a while. And he's still trying to do it consistently, guys, but he is busy with school and baseball and everything else. And Dad's been trying to work with her a little bit. But hopefully you'll see her in a video or two maybe this coming season, this duck season, and we can kind of get her acclimated to the woods and take her out to the timber, guys, make a couple of timber hunts with her. I'm looking forward to that. So, but, yeah, I'm sorry. I know I'm shifting gears there, guys. But going back to those goggle eyes, that was really a fun trip that me and Jacob had. And we got back to the launch, and this guy comes up to the boat, and he's talking to us, and he says, man, he says, y'all had any luck? And I said, yeah, so we had some luck. He said, what y'all are fishing, bass or brim? And I said, brim. I said, we went for Sokolay. I said, but we ended up catching a bunch of brim. He says, well, you mind if I see them? And I said, yeah, no problem. So open up the live well, man. Them things were rolling over on each other. There was no room left in the live wells for those fish. And he said, holy shit. He said, my God. He said, man, y'all really got on them. He said, huh? I said, yeah. I said, pretty much. I said, all you got to do is go out there, hit the structure, hit any kind of structure with a tube jig. I said, heaven forbid you have crickets. I said, if you have crickets, you better buy about 500 crickets. I said, to go out there and catch what we caught today. I said, because they are loaded. I said, and every one of them's big, man. So the Chaffalot Basin Spillway, man, they got some big brim. They get, you know, I would tell you that they probably get a really good crop every year because not as many guys are probably targeting them as some of the local lakes and rivers. Lucy, what you doing? You barking? You want to get on camera? Lucy wants to say hi, I guess, guys. So, but anyway, we just jumping up. So anyway, I think that not having the pressure that some of the lakes here and all around, you know, have as far as brim fishermen go and stuff like that. And then what you can't do is you can't fish it year round like some of the lakes because the river stages fluctuate, the water gets too high, and it's not real fishable. So those fish really get a good break. They get some good spawning cycles, and those fish just get big, man. They don't get touched like they do on a lot of the local lakes and stuff like that. So it's fun when you can catch them right and that water drops where you could go get them. You could have a lot of fun down there, man. You can book a trip with a local guide maybe or reach out to somebody that you know maybe that would be interested in taking you out. And I promise you, you'll have a blast if you've never done that before. So, but right now, the point is, guys, that the brim is what's moving up right now, the perch, the brim, whatever you want to call them. That's what's moving up on the banks right now as we sit here in mid-April. It's been fun the last couple of weekends. We caught some really nice ones. Still caught a couple of Sokolay last week. I was really happy with that. I know that I think we took an afternoon trip. Yeah, it was an afternoon trip we took last weekend right here not far from the house to Blind River, which is our local fishery here in Gonzales. And, you know, we launched at 1:30. I was trying to think of the time. It was 1:30 that we launched at, and at 3:30, we had one fish. We had one fish that we were going to actually keep. As a matter of fact, we launched at 1:30. We ran to our spot, checked the water. It was all messed up where we wanted to fish, where we had had some luck the week before. But with that water being messed up, I said, I'm going to make a cast on some structure, see if I can get a bite. I casted first cast last weekend, and bam, I catch a bass. I'm like, well, okay, try a little bit more. Couldn't repeat it. The current was pulling us out. I said, okay, let's go to a different area. So we ended up moving up, and at 3:30, we had that one bass that we were keeping. And we were trying to get a mess of fish to do a fish fry. And by about 4:30, something happened where we just hit where the fish turned on. It either turned on or we hit the right stretch. And we ended up catching, I don't know, 8 or 9 Sokolay, I think we had. And we had a bunch of nice big brim that were bigger, you know, big as the hand or bigger. So what we like to do, we like to fillet them. And then on the brim, you know, we like to scale those and fry those whole. The kids love to chew on those tails and eat those tails whenever they're eating some fried fish. So we do it both ways. Mama likes to eat the filleted ones. So that's what we typically do. But yeah, I mean, it was a good trip last week as well, guys. And I can tell you that the brim are what the action is right now at the moment. I think that you're going to continue to see those brim bed up probably for the next couple of weeks for sure. As we, at least here in South Louisiana, we're going to probably have them go through into May, beginning of May sometimes, right around that time. And then what you're going to see and what I've always experienced as, like I talked about, that shallow structure that's a little bit further out from the bank on that drop-off area. Maybe it's lily pads. Maybe it's, you know, wood cover, cypress trees. Cypress stumps, tupelo gum, that type of stuff that we got down here. You'll typically see those brim pull out to that structure after they're done spawning. And then you're going to start seeing, if you're a bass fisherman, guys, you're going to really want to key in on those structure, on that same structure, because what they're going to be doing is they're going to be keying in on those brim. As those brim pull out, those bass get really aggressive. You got your shad spawn that's starting probably here shortly. You're gonna have those bass keying in on those shad and also on those brim. All those little fish that just hatched, all those little hatchlings, those bass are going to be exploding on them. So when you're gonna get to those lily pad fields, you're gonna get to that structure, you're gonna see those bass, boom, they're gonna be hitting top water. And that's at that point, that's one of my favorite times to start fishing a frog, man, because frog fishing, when you can get on that frog bite, it is absolutely phenomenal. You guys know that. And that's typically the patterns that we're going to see here in South Louisiana over the next month or so. So I hope some of this has helped you guys. I appreciate you guys tuning in to watch this episode, to listen to this episode. And we talk about our great sponsors on every episode, guys, so I do not want to leave them out. With it being fishing season and springtime right now, I talked about my buddy Blake Benoit over at Benoit Performance Baits. Go check him out, guys. We have a promotion code that you can enter on his website, LastStop10. If you put that in, you will receive 10% off of your entire order with Benoit Performance Baits. You can check them out on their Facebook page, Instagram, TikTok, and they have a website, guys, BenoitPerformanceBaits.com. Go check them out. Get yourself, whether it's pan fishing baits, plastics, jig heads, any of that stuff that you want, that he uses one of my favorite jig heads that are, he makes one of my favorite jig heads that I've been using. I've been kind of moving away from the cork, casting out those tube jigs and retrieving them back slowly like you do a beetle spin over the last couple of weeks for those brim. And I use a Benoit's Performance Baits, a specific jig head that he makes with a little spring bait keeper on it. I love that jig head, guys. He has them at Benoit Performance Baits. Go check them out. And also, we talk about SRD20, guys. With it being boat care season, you have to take care of those boats, whether it's aluminum, it's fiberglass, whatever it may be. My buddy, we just did a contest with my friend Stuart Delcom, owner of SRD20 Boat Care Products. We did a giveaway last week, and we had a lucky winner for a boat care kit that went out, got mailed out to him this week. But if you're looking to protect your investment, guys, I'm in the boating industry. That's what I do for a living. I've seen a million products over the years claim to be great and how awesome they are for your boat. And they absolutely don't make a difference, or they're just about what everybody else got or what you could purchase at Walmart on the shelf. Well, when I got a hold of SRD20 and I came across their products, guys, I truly believe that they make the best boat care products on the market, which is why we reached out to them and started, you know, purchasing items from them, buying product from them for ourselves, and then ultimately struck up a relationship. And Stuart so graciously said, hey, I want to support you guys. I think what you guys do is awesome, and I want to be a part of it. He did, and I appreciate that, guys. He supports us here at Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors, and we support them, and we tell customers about them all the time, guys. We also have a promo code with them, Last Stop. Use Last Stop at checkout on srd20.com, and you will receive 20% off your purchase, guys. That's an awesome deal for a great boat care product that'll last you the entire year. You can take care of all your investments. I use it on my vehicles. I use it on everything, pretty much. My rotomold and high-dollar ice chest, anything that needs UV protection, or I want to keep looking good, keep the pollen this time of year off of it, keep it clean. SRD20 Boat Care Products, guys, I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Also, it's never too early, guys. My buddy Jay Thomas over at Blindgrass, if you're looking at duck season and you're looking to get your stuff, you know, your floating blinds, your brush blinds, your boat blinds, any kind of blind that you got, guys, Blindgrass has the ultimate concealment product for you to brush up those blinds. Teal season is not that far away, believe it or not. We are not too far. September is not too far down the road, guys, and you are going to want to conceal those blinds. Go check out Blindgrass at blindgrass.com. I promise you, you will be impressed with the synthetic blend of grass that Blindgrass has to offer. I have been using Blindgrass products on my boat blind, guys, for 3 seasons now. I have never changed it. I've never lost a blade of it going down the road. It does not rot. It does not mildew. It does not stink like old traditional fast grass does. You never have to rebrush it, guys. That's the main thing. You set up the blind, buy it from Blindgrass, set it up, brush your blind, and I guarantee you it'll be years before you have to brush another blind. So go check them out. If you haven't heard about them, go check them out, blindgrass.com. You could look at them on social media, go visit them, give them a follow, give them a like, social media. Go watch the previous episode of the podcast that we did with Jay. It was, we had him on the show with us, and it was a great interview. He talked about blonde grass and how he had went to all the big box retail, such as Cabela, such as Bass Pro, and they absolutely loved this product when he presented it to them. But the reason they did not pick it up, guys, was because they told him it was too durable and it lasted too long. Can you believe that? Can you believe that they did not pick it up because he was told it was too durable of a product? Well, that's exactly what we want as hunters. That's exactly what we want as outdoorsmen. My money, I want it to go as far as it could go nowadays, as tight as things are out there in the world. So go check out Blonde Grass, guys. I promise you, you will not be disappointed with them either. Well, guys, that's all I have for y'all on this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, we appreciate you guys. I see some thumbs up, some likes on the video. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a follow if you haven't subscribed to the channel on YouTube or Facebook. We'd appreciate it, guys. We are growing substantially, and we're doing it the right way. We are doing it, bringing you good content, hopefully, that you guys enjoy and can use. And we are, love doing it, guys. We absolutely love all the guys that we run into out in the field and say, hey, we saw your videos. We saw you. We listened to the podcast. Man, we enjoy it. You know, you get us through a work shift at work when we're during duck season and we can't go duck hunting. I had a guy yesterday come up to me at a football game, and he said, hey, man, I just want to shake your hand. He said, we've been listening to y'all podcast now for a couple of years, he said, and when I can't go hunt because I have to go to work, he said, I listen to the episodes, and that gets me through my work shifts. He said, I just wanted to tell you that. I appreciate what you guys do. And, man, I tell you what, that is so awesome when I run into those people like that, and I appreciate the comments that he made. So thank you guys so much for the support. Give us, if you haven't, you know, subscribed to the channel, give us a thumbs up, give us a subscribe, click that subscribe button. We'd appreciate it, guys. But until next time, this is Jacob with Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors, and we'll see y'all again soon. We'll be talking outdoors again, guys. Y'all take care.